HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Dr. Paul Cullen. Paul is part of Sea Change International. Paul, do you want to just introduce yourself maybe and just give an explanation as to what Sea Change do?
Yeah, thanks, Declan. Happy to be here today. As you said, I'm Managing Director of Sea Change. So what Sea Change do is we basically offer solutions, services, and digital apps to client organizations to improve their safety culture and their safety performance. My background's in leadership and looking at safety culture and how to lead safety culture effectively. And I have a PhD in that space, in the space of basically organizational leadership. So Sea Change started in 2005. It's actually a family business. My dad started it. And I would have jumped in then around 2014. And we would have grown then since then. We're based in Nace. We've got a team of 25 staff and they're the best team in the world.
Very good. So health and safety, what are the typical things facing most organizations at the moment? I mean, and has it changed during COVID?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, firstly, I suppose there are different things that affect organizations depending on what type of organization they are. For example, there's been a 42% increase in the actual volume of lost time accidents in the last 5 years, right? So the trends in terms of accidents are gone up, which affects all sectors across the board. And the nature of those accidents are different depending on the sector. So a high footfall type of client, which might be a retail group or a hospitality group, could be affected by public liability incidents, obviously, where customers are actually engaging with their business and an accident could happen, as well as employee liability issues. Whereas then in a more manufacturing context, maybe, or a pharmaceutical context, it's more focused on probably higher risk processes that affect employee liability and actually the workforce itself. So there's a spectrum there, but obviously COVID-19 has introduced a new risk on top of already a quite wide risk spectrum within the workforce, depending on the nature of the job. And managing that has been a challenge for sure, I think, for a lot of businesses, no matter where they operate, unless it's kind of an e-commerce business or something like that. And one of the big challenges, to be honest, Declan, is obviously with the new risk, I think a lot of businesses, it might have been a bit of a wake-up call as well in terms of how to maybe pay more attention to safety in a more meaningful way, especially the behavioral side of it. But also it's so that, you know, companies don't focus maybe too much on COVID-19 because there's a lot of other risks out there as well. And it's sure, one of many. Yeah. So yeah, there's quite a bit. It's certainly been an interesting couple of years, in the space, but there are a lot of challenges from a safety point of view.
Sure. You touched on behavioral based approaches to it, but before I go to that, obviously the changing face of, well, a lot of people's work environment is working from home. Are you guys seeing your clients engage with you about the safety aspects of that, or is there anything trending in that department?
Yeah, absolutely. Given the requirement for remote working, the health and safety requirements there are essentially that a remote working risk assessment is carried out. Some businesses are much more proactive in that space than others, but it's kind of coming down the track regardless, Declan. We've engaged and supported with that in terms of helping companies actually design a remote working risk assessment template, and then in fact administering it. So, you know, via Zoom or Teams, actually working with their staff members to carry out a risk assessment to ensure that, you know, ergonomically, they're set up at home in a safe manner with the office, that they understand, I suppose, the key best practice standards from a safety point of view, and that they feel comfortable they're being looked after by their employer.
Yeah, I think it was a shock for a lot of employers to realize they had some legal obligations around their staff members working from home. So it was one of many shifts for that COVID instigated.
Absolutely, yeah, and I still think there's a number that probably are still, they're still maybe waiting to see how the lay of the land lies. But look, it's, you know, COVID has kind of changed the nature of working in many ways. And there'll always be an element of remote working, which means that obviously safety needs to be looked at from a remote working capacity. And that if they don't have the controls and protocols in place, they really need to focus on that, because it is a duty of care once they're on the clock, wherever it might be.
Yeah, interesting. So you touched on behavior-based approaches to this, Paul. Why don't you just tell me a little bit about what that is, and maybe if you don't mind, just contrast it to you know, what maybe traditionally used to happen.
Yeah. I suppose this is kind of touches on to the sea change philosophy of it, Declan. So look, the reality is, and I'll talk candidly here, a lot of health and safety is, it's not sexy, right? It's not interesting. A lot of people have, especially companies, have treated it like a cost rather than an investment. And I can't blame them for that, because in many ways it's been over-engineered in terms of its communication, right? So safety is a very technical discipline. And, you know, there's requirements for things like risk assessments, structural, environmental, there's requirements for policies and safety statements and making sure that there's compliance with the legal requirements of legislation. But what's happened over time is that that's become quite a box ticking exercise. So the focus is really on, well, look, do I have the piece of paper on the shelf? Have I got the safety statement, you know, that actually is gathering dust and doesn't make sense to anybody or connect with the hearts and minds of people in general? That's the way the traditional industry has just evolved. Okay. And the problem with that, Declan, is that 80 to 95% of all workplace accidents, when you do a 5-why analysis, so you ask the question why five times after an accident, you know, or about 85% of the time, it's rooted in behavior, okay? And that's a completely personal human factor. But, you know, even given that statistic, you know, 90% of companies still just focus on ticking the box alone. Compliance and structural risk assessments and all that stuff is really important. But the big key is then, how do you connect that safety message to your people? Because ultimately the biggest risk is actually the frontline workers. They're the ones that are doing the job. And unless they're connected in a meaningful way to safety standards, it's not actually going to improve the performance and keep people safe at the end of the day, which is obviously the requirement that every business has and that every business wants to enforce reinforce, should I say, in their companies.
And when you say it's you know, it is behavioral, it's how the people do it. So if people have a safety statement, then it says the process for doing something is X, Y, and Z, but the behavior is A, B, and C. How do you start to connect them? As you say, what's the process for you guys, Paul? How do you approach it with teams, with companies, with organizations?
Yeah, so there's depending on what the type of company is. So for example, we work a lot in the high footfall space. So you know, we've a lot of hotel chain groups and retail groups and sport and leisure groups, right? So for the requirements there really is to perform site-specific risk assessments to make sure that you've got the required documentation and compliance to legally fulfill what the HSA require, as well as then the provision of training and things like manual handling training and fire safety, etc., first aid. But you know, once you have that safety statement, which is that piece of paper, and it's a big thick document. I mean, I'm in the safety business and I would struggle to actually digest a lot of what is in a safety statement. I suppose what we do is we would actually carry out the initial risk assessment, which is a compliance requirement. We create that document, but then instead of having that document sit on a shelf gathering dust, we actually create a behavior-based safety management system from that. So one of the things we do is all of the risk assessments and the best practice standards that are most relevant to the industry. So for example, let's take retail. You're talking about slip, trip, and fall, which is a very big risk in that space. Manual handling, you know, use of combis, could be, you know, working in the goods inwards area, best practice safety when it comes to the deli, for example, access egress points. We would actually take those and create visual behavior-based safety standards, right, that are actually go up in the area. So people that work in the deli actually have a visual lean best practice images and controls as to what is the standard there. And that's connected via a digital solution so they can train and refresh their knowledge and they can, you know, basically get quizzed and score how well they understand that. It's really good for induction. That's one of the things we do. So we actually put that system in place and connect it with the business and the people itself. We also train and certify safety leaders in each of those sites so that people understand how to lead safety effectively and what the routines might be. So there's monthly safety meetings that we would help leaders actually run and manage. We then provide, you know, site support visits to go in and do kind of health checks to see how things are going. Has there been any issues? How are people engaging? And then we also come back at the end of the year and we would do a safety audit and score them to see how well they're compared with the industry at large. Where are some of the gaps? How do they continuously improve? Because safety culture is a journey, right? Like it's something that always has to be managed because people are people. And the ability to connect with people on an ongoing basis is really key. So that's really our, one of the systems, for example, our partnerships we have in that space. And it's all about engaging people and making sure that if any staff member finds a safety issue, a cracked tile or it could be a frayed wire, that they're actually empowered to identify that, to log it in a real meaningful way and basically get their name in lights because they've just made the place safer. They've added value to the company. In the corporate space, Declan, which is more manufacturing, pharmaceutical, we take a slightly different approach. It's a little bit more advanced in many ways just because they would have a lot of compliance systems in place. They wouldn't need maybe a risk assessment safety statement initially. However, a lot of those companies, their challenge is they've hit a bit of a ceiling because they've really done all of the engineering structural risk assessments. They've got all the method statements and they've basically spent millions often on training and doing the same thing and getting the same result, which is, yeah, they've made improvements, but they haven't bridged the gap between compliance and behavior. And they're still having incidents and accidents, right? So in that space, we really try and amplify what they've done. And we go in and we basically measure their safety culture through a solution called our safety culture footprint, which we essentially measure the attitudes that lead to unsafe behaviors. Once we identify that, we actually see what are the most problematic attitudes that exist within the workforce because management haven't communicated safety well enough, right? So we kind of hold a mirror up to management to say, these are cultural gaps, right, that you have to fill. Once we identify that, we design a behavior-based program, which is all about, employee-led from the ground up, all about improving ownership. There's a lot of leadership training involved, improving frontline manager leadership skills. And basically, we actually then put that intervention in and we remeasure as we go. And there's been fantastic results actually in both sectors. Our average before and after impact is about a 50% reduction in lost time incidents across the board. And that's within, like, our client base is about 1,600 client sites. So it really does pay off when you do health and safety right. And that's the big message.
Yeah. You're talking to an idiot when it comes to knowing the data around this, Paul. So what would be a typical, for say, a retailer or a high footfall, as you describe it, or a manufacturing, what sort of time would be lost per staff member per year? What would be the typical at the moment?
Yeah. So, well, a lost time incident is anything that's above 3 days out of work. And the average cost implication for a business with about 50 staff in this country is ranges from about 12,000 to 15,000. Okay, in terms of like non-insured cost of a lost time incident. So that includes obviously the time away from work, the retraining effort, the filling gaps, the productivity losses, all of that type of stuff. So there's, if you just look at the financial impact, you're talking about 12 to 15 grand per LTI. LTI incidents range based on sector. And based on also how well that business tends to manage health and safety. That's not even taken into account the reputational damage potentially, or indeed the cultural damage that could happen with among people within the business. And then there's obviously the insurance side, which is a different story altogether. Like doing business in Ireland is, out of all the countries we work with, Ireland is one where we'd be all constantly saying you have to do health and safety properly because, and you have to engage people in it because, from an insurance point of view and a claims point of view, we have a very high claims culture. Our payouts are still much higher than most countries. And the actual implications from a cost point of view are significant.
Obviously, trying to get people to change what they've done for years and years and years, culturally embedded behaviors is difficult. Is there any huge differences that you guys experience when it's the you know, the simple thing, the frayed wire, I think what might have been your just your example earlier, or if you bring it to a big manufacturing plant and, oh, well, actually this equipment, piece of equipment that costs millions is, you know, needs to be fixed or rejigged or whatever it is. How do you approach from that point of view, or is there differences in terms of buy-in?
Yeah, absolutely. So the buy-in is huge, right? So, you know, when you think about health and safety and making that transition from it being even viewed as a cost to more of an investment is really all about leadership buy-in within the senior leadership teams. Like, so that could be a retail owner, that could be a site manager, it could be a senior leadership team in a big pharmaceutical plant. But that's the first big shift that has to happen. I mean, we've not worked with companies who've outright said, you know, we don't care about the safety cultural aspect of it. Well, then look, we straight away said, well, we can't work with you because that's actually has to be in place from the beginning. I do think we're definitely seeing a big trend in that improving, though. I mean, a lot of companies now, you know, in terms of corporate governance and social responsibility and looking at certain things, safety culture is a big buzzword in terms of how they can make more of that. So the buy-in at leadership is key, Declan. A lot of the things like the frayed wires and they're hazards, right? So they're things that kind of are constantly there. There's dynamic and there's static ones. There's chronic risk and there's acute risk. They're constant and they vary, right? And a lot of systems that companies would have are there to catch those things. One of the biggest problems is actually, though, how do you improve ownership at the frontline level, right? And to be quite honest, a lot of frontline staff and workforce, they don't own their own safety standards because safety has not been communicated in a meaningful way to them, right? They're not involved. Yeah. So the big thing when it comes to leading safety from the top and even at management level, no matter what the level of organization is do you have the trust, right? So have you actually put in protocols that make sense to the workforce? So for example, if you put in PPE protocols in a manufacturing context, it actually slows the worker down or makes it really clunky and they weren't engaged before this PPE control came down, that's going to be a problem, right? There's a better way of approaching that so that they trust that you're putting in the safety protocols that actually work with them and for them. And the other piece then is value, right? And when it comes to leadership, do the workforce feel valued in with their contribution? We see this a lot where, because of the over-engineered nature of health and safety, you know, there's kind of a lot of list gathering. So you might get a health and safety manager to just basically does the rounds and gathers lists of problems and problems and problems, brings it back to their Excel spreadsheet and basically starts working on them. But, you know, 6 weeks later or 2 months later, there's been no change, there's been no feedback. If I'm on the front line and I pointed out that there's a safety hazard that needs fixed or needs controlled, and then it goes to my manager and I hear nothing for a couple of months, I'm going to be pretty pissed off. It's like ordering something at a restaurant and nobody comes out and tells you, you know, you've got a lovely steak and you're waiting for half an hour, but nobody's come out and actually said, sorry, sir, you know, we were having a bit of a trouble with the kitchen, but we're working on it. You know, it makes a big difference. So the actual communication, the feedback structures, the proximity of managers around frontline, setting up actual behavior-based human communication structures to actually engage people so that they trust the safety message, their contribution is valued. That's the biggest problem. Typically companies are very good at assessing risk, making sure machines operate safely. It's less to do with equipment, it's more to do with the hearts and minds of people.
Yeah, I think that leadership piece is definitely key, as it is in so many things. I you made a good point, Paul, earlier, just around the, you know, seeing their name up in lights and celebrating people who, you know, who call out risks or hazards or whatever it might be. And obviously, the other part of that then is that the thing gets fixed. So, like what you're saying, that the action speaking louder than words. Why have we got to a place where, well, hopefully we're not still in that place, but why do a lot of companies do what you just described there? Is they gather, they do the risk assessment, they take details of the incident, and then nothing changes for long periods of time. What, in your view, why does that happen?
Yeah, it's again, it's a great point. I think health and safety as a domain has has always been one where it's lagging, right? So it's always based on lagging indicators. You're basically tracking what's happened. You're reacting to what's happened. And a lot of what I suppose the sea change approach does is to try and proactively identify KPIs, or what we would call KBIs, key behavioral indicators. So things like the measurement of attitudes that lead to unsafe behaviors, that's a very proactive, you know, proprietary solution that we've got. It's things like looking at near miss catches, obviously, and being able to kind of promote them. I think the industry as a whole, Declan, has been engineered to identify things that have already happened, and that's how performance is based. And it's a very, very prehistoric way of looking at performance in general. I mean, most, like, things like quality has moved on. Most of the operational KPIs are all around prevention rather than reaction. But health and safety is still stuck in that place. It's kind of to do with, I think, the general approach of a lot of traditional service providers, but also the attitude of senior leadership to safety. It's kind of like, oh, we must have, rather than this is a core aspect of our business. And to reinforce that from a psychological point of view, which again, my PhD was based in psychology, you know, everybody wants to, you know, go home from work, get to work and go home from work in one piece and safe. And, you know, if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, safety,
just as you said that, it just popped into my head, Paul, as you're
yeah, it's fundamental to performance. I mean, there's been great case studies, Declan, where companies have, like Alcoa is a great one, where they really came, the new CEO took over and he focused completely on safety and safety culture, but bridging that gap between, you know, hearts and minds and standards. And what they found is productivity, morale, retention all went through the roof. Okay, and so performance, good safety is not contradictory to performance. They go hand in hand when it's done well. So I just think it's why it is where it is a mix of, I think, where the industry has come from. I think it's a mix of, you know, companies have engineered it to the point where the KPIs are all reactive, like they're lagging, but it doesn't have to be that way. And a lot of companies are making the change. And as I said, it's, you know, you pointed there as well, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. People have to feel safe before they can actually be fully productive and actually enjoy work, which is obviously really important today more than ever.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And it's a refreshing approach to it. Paul, thanks for your time today. If organizations would like to get in contact with yourself and see change, what's the best way to do so?
Yeah, well, you can check us out, www.seachange-intl.com. And then, you know, email the office at info@seachange-intl.com. Or you can give us a call either on 045-856-028.
Brilliant. Paul, thanks for your time
today. Love to hear from you. Yeah, thanks, Declan. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.